Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Just Us Talks with Tisha. This is my weekly Blog Talk Radio show that I talk about everything from law to politics to social issues. The show is every Wednesday from 10 to 10:30. You can catch us also on 95.9. FM in Washington, D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. And on that show, we are on the Marketing Pulpit on the first Friday of each month with the show host, Robert Gatewood. So tune in on the first Friday of March and every month thereafter to hear those discussions as well. So thank you for tuning in. Today's show, we will be talking about dissipation of assets. And who don't know, I am a family law, criminal law, and personal injury attorney in the state of Maryland. And my practice is probably about 90% family law. So I deal with a lot of issues as it relates to the family dynamic. Everything from divorce, which includes alimony, property distribution, to things like child custody, child support, modifications of child custody, child support, as well as protective orders. So today, I want to talk about dissipation of marital assets. And it is a very, very important topic to discuss because I think a lot of people either don't know what it is and don't know that they're doing it, or they just have been given misinformation about what it means. So I want to start by explaining what dissipation of assets actually is. So dissipation of assets is basically defined as expending marital assets for the principal purpose of reducing the funds that are available for equitable distribution, because Maryland is what is called an equitable distribution jurisdiction. What that means is the state of Maryland, when they're doing, when the courts have to divide assets in a divorce, they do it based on equitable distribution. And a lot of times people confuse equitable with equal. Equitable does not mean equal, it means what's fair. And so what the courts in Maryland do is they go and they look at a series of factors when they're trying to decide what is fair. Because obviously fairness is circumstantial, meaning that it varies from case to case, and it's important to know that because it's not a 50-50 split. While it can be a 50-50 split, it doesn't have to be. So when you look at dissipation of assets, it's also where, like, essentially, like, one spouse is using marital property for their own benefit, and the purpose is not related to the marriage, and it's at a time where the marriage is undergoing an irreconcilable breakdown, right? So it's when you guys separate, and you are, buying cars for your mistress, taking all the money out of the bank account, taking various loans that are unrelated to the marital relationship, hey, or your IRA or whatever the case may be, that could be an example of dissipation of marital assets. And the courts do not look fondly on people who dissipate marital assets when they're trying to get a divorce. Not a good thing. You don't want your lawyer to be able to prove that you have dissipated the opposing counsel to be able to prove that you've dissipated assets. So I think it's important to note, and I've mentioned this in several shows, I've explained what the definition of marital property is because I think there's still a lot of confusion about what that means. Marital property is essentially all property that was acquired the course of a valid marriage. Unless that property was acquired by gift, by inheritance, or if there is a prior agreement that basically says that the property is not marital property. And that sort of agreement would be something like a prenuptial agreement. And I did a show a couple of weeks ago about prenuptial agreements and why everybody needs one. They are your friends, and I still will always hold to the premise that everybody, regardless of, you know, whether you think you don't have a lot of money or a lot of assets, everybody should have a prenuptial agreement. But, you know, it's funny when we go back to dissipation of marital assets. Now that you're very, very clear about what marital property is, you know that dissipating the assets and dissipating the property is not a good thing. Some of the examples that I just gave was just sort of like I said, taking all of the money out of the bank account. Now, this is something that that happens very often. It's where a party will go in because they know they just got served with divorce papers, and they're upset. They're very upset that their wife or their husband has dared to file a petition for divorce. And so now, to get back at this person, what they're going to do is they are going to go take all of the money out of the bank, and, you know, maybe they'll decide to leave $20 in the bank, you know, just because, right? And so that's what happens quite often, more often than not. Or the other very, very common thing that happens is spending your marital income on your mistress. So the dissipation can be found in that as well, even though, you know, as I just read or just stated, that it's when the marriage is undergoing an irreconcilable breakdown. And so, you know, it can certainly be argued that during the course of your affair with, you know, someone else, that the marriage was at that time going through an irreconcilable breakdown. And then, of course, you know, you decided to go out and, you know, buy your girlfriend or boyfriend a Range Rover with marital assets, which, again, as we just discussed, is all of your income, you know, that was what, if you earned money during the course of your marriage, is marital property. So if you took your income and then went and spent that on your paramour, that's highly problematic for dissipation, for an argument at least, for dissipation of assets. So I want to kind of talk for a second about dissipating assets by hiding assets. Because remember, the principal purpose of dissipation is to basically reduce the funds available for equitable distribution. And so if you have a spouse or a partner who is taking marital property and putting it in the name of someone else for the sole purpose of hiding the assets, that could be argued that it's a form of dissipation of property. And it's something that I've certainly come across quite often in my practice where, you know, someone will do just that, that they'll have a whole bunch of different vehicles or bank accounts and things like that, and they put the things in the name of someone else so that if someone were to search for the property, no property or very, very limited property would come up under the name of the spouse. And so it could certainly be an argument that is a form of dissipation. And remember, it is up to the court to decide whether or not they're going to find for dissipation of property. So what can you do to avoid dissipation of assets? Well, you could certainly be forthcoming about the property and not try to essentially cheat your spouse out of what is marital property. That's the first thing. But some of the other things that you could do is make sure that you listen to Just Us Talks with Tisha every Wednesday so that you are able to get the scoop on various issues in family law. Because if you're going through a divorce, you certainly want to be be aware of what you are in for. Because I've done this show for several months now, And one of the things that I always tell people is that going through a divorce is something that is very, very difficult. I watch my clients go through it. I watch, you know, the kids, you know, what I hear from, you know, my clients about what the kids are going through. It's tough. And the last thing that that the kids should be subjected to is having less to live on because one of the spouses wanted to essentially cheat the other spouse and essentially the children out of, you know, a standard of living that they've become accustomed to throughout the course of their lives. So you want to always make sure, you always want to make sure that you know what you need to do in order to prepare yourself for if you have a pending divorce or if you are thinking about filing for divorce. You want to make sure that you have all of the facts and you want to make sure that you speak to an attorney about the case because too often people do go into situations where they are less than educated about what divorce entails. And so that's always important. One of the other things to also consider is people go in and take money out of the 401k. Now, obviously, if anyone has a 401k or any kind of retirement account, you know that you can, most of those accounts, you can take loans from the account. It may be for hardship or for, you know, some are a lot more liberal than others, and they may allow you to take things out for like college tuition for your kids or for a down payment on a home or something like that. So you know, depending on the type of retirement account that you have, it depends, you know, that certainly dictates how and if you can take money out of the account. Now, the courts have decided that if you are taking money out for something like attorney's fees, that's not considered dissipation of assets, but make sure that you speak to a lawyer, preferably me, about the situation to determine whether or not the attorneys have held that the reasonableness of the attorney's fees will determine whether or not the payment of the attorney's fees from marital assets is considered dissipation of property. So you want to just be careful with, you know, with how you move forward because you can certainly be dinged when it comes to the equitable distribution if you have done something, even unwittingly, to dissipate marital funds. So when we talk about divorce, I feel like I can do a show every week on divorce and never run out of material because there's always something that many people don't know and that is important information for people to have if they're contemplating divorce or if they're going through a divorce. And so one of those things is the concept of desertion. And the reason I want to talk about constructive desertion is because it's one of those little things that never really come up or don't come up that often. It's not really one of the grounds that I see a lot when people file for divorce, right? Because, you know, people will either file, maybe they've been separated for a year and, you know, they want to do a grounds that's not a fault-based grounds. So, and also that gives you less to prove when you don't have, when you're not arguing a fault-based ground. So when we talk about constructive desertion, you think about, let's say, actual desertion, right? So actual desertion is where the person has actually left the marriage and either abandoned or deserted the marriage, right? But constructive desertion is a little bit more nuanced than that. And constructive desertion is where the partner has not necessarily left the home, but what they've done is one of the parties has made life in the home so unbearable that for the other spouse to stay in it would essentially be, an affront to their dignity, their self-respect, even their health, So, and it doesn't have to be that it's a situation where the spouse is, beating the other spouse or anything like that. It doesn't have to be anything that
So, sorry, everybody. It looks like I had a little bit of a phone issue and got disconnected. But to pick up where we left off, I don't know what happened. I'm going to blame technology. But we left off talking about constructive desertion. And I was explaining what constructive desertion actually is. And so I was talking about cruelty of treatment. But cruelty of treatment it does not have to be cruel treatment in order to be constructive desertion. Because like I said, constructive desertion is just where the other person's behavior has caused this, basically has caused the other spouse to leave the marriage. And it could be situations where one of the spouses is unjustifiably denying sex from their spouse. Yes, that can be constructive desertion if the court finds it. But there is case law that a spouse was denying sex from the other spouse, and that caused the marriage to deteriorate, and that caused the other spouse to leave the marriage. And so before you start denying sex, you want to make sure that if that causes your spouse to leave you, that you want to make sure that you're not setting up a grounds for a fault-based divorce. And the reason, like I said, I want to talk about constructive desertion because it's not one of those things that comes up. A lot of times people leave marriages and they may have a fault-based grounds and not even realize it because, like I said, a lot of people do not even know that constructive desertion is even a thing. So, like I said, before you start denying sex, make sure that if it leads to your spouse leaving you, that when you meet with your lawyer about your divorce case, that you ask them, could this be a grounds for constructive desertion basically be a ground based on the behavior. So what I want to spend the last 10 minutes of the show talking about is some of the things that are important to bring to your lawyer's office and to talk to your lawyer when you meet with them. So a lot of times when people come to my office, they don't know the type of information that is needed in order to move forward specifically with a divorce case. But this happens in all contexts of the law, in criminal cases, in personal injury cases. This happens in all areas, specifically in the areas that I practice. So you want to make sure if you have a family law case, if you have a divorce case and the case has not been filed yet, but you are inquiring about getting a divorce, you want to make sure that if you have any documents that you think would help to prove your case, that you bring them in to the attorney's office. If you have video, right? Because someone came to my office once with a video recording that they wanted me to look at and to see if this would help them in their case. So something like that may be helpful to bring in. Also, be honest with your attorney, because I start off my consultations when I meet with people explaining to them, and I'm sure, all lawyers do this, at least they should. If you're meeting with an attorney for a consultation, everything that you discuss is protected under what's called the attorney-client privilege. Now, sometimes people will want to bring a third person with them for the consultation, and that's absolutely fine so long as the potential client understands that the presence of a third party does break attorney-client privilege. So long as you understand that you know that that I am at a loss for words today. I think that little phone interruption kind of threw me off. But so long as you understand that because the attorney cannot control what that third party could potentially tell people, you know, that is why it breaks privilege. So you want to make sure that if you have a third party with you during a consultation with an attorney, that it is someone that you trust with the information that you will be sharing and that will in the information that will be shared with you during that time. So the reason for attorney-client privilege is because essentially it's important to being able to represent someone that they have, that the attorney has all of the information. So because of that, there is this thing called attorney-client privilege even before you hire the lawyer. Because if the attorney does not have all of the information, it's really hard for them to really gauge the information that they need to provide to you, right? And I tell people all the time, one seemingly small fact could potentially change the information that I give you and the advice that I give you. So it's always important to be as honest as possible with the attorney that you meet with. And I wanted to end the segment discussing that because I think a lot of people may come into attorney's offices, you know, very overwhelmed. I mean, it's certainly something that I see regularly. People are overwhelmed. You know, they're just maybe just contemplating filing a case. They're not really sure which way to go. And so maybe, you know, maybe they're not in the right headspace to kind of think about all of the different things that would be helpful to the consultation. So I wanted to make sure that people understand some of the things that are helpful, right? And it certainly is dependent upon the type of case that you have or that you're bringing before the attorney for advice. So, you know, when it comes to child custody cases and child support cases, you know, it's important to have as much information as you can about your children's mother or father. That's important because it may be helpful for the attorney to look up the case on Maryland Case Search while they're there in your office or while you're there in their office so that they can see maybe what other cases have been filed. And there, you know, there have been times where people have come to my office not realizing that the other person may have beat them to the courthouse and the other person has already filed the case. Right. So all of that information is very, very helpful. If you are trying to do a modification of any court order, always bring with you a copy of the order that you're trying to have modified. The reason being is because in order for the attorney to, one, know if the order can be modified, is to look at the type of order and the language in the order, right? Because oftentimes, you know, people don't know what happened in court, right? They don't understand because they didn't read the document. And even if they did read the document, sometimes they don't understand the language and what specific legal terminology means and how that changes what they can do next, right? So so it's always important to bring that information into your attorney. If you have any questions about the type of information that is needed during the consultation, be sure to ask the attorney before you meet with them. And if you are going to meet me, always ask in advance the type of information. Most of the time I will tell you, but you know, if for some reason it slips my mind, always ask and I will certainly tell you the type of information that will be helpful. So I want to kind of close out the show by talking about social, something that's happening kind of in our world. And I know it may seem like I'm going from topic to topic to topic, But, you know, the show as a, you know, it's called Just Us Talks with Tisha because sometimes we just talk. And I provide information to people that I think is helpful. And I always think that it's helpful to kind of have these talks and have these conversations and talk about what we all think every single day. When we turn on the television and then we're looking at the news, you know, not everybody may be going through a divorce or have a child custody case or whatever the case may be, but most of us turn on the news every single day and we think about the things that are happening in our world. And, you know, if you follow my show at all, you do know that, you know, at least every week, you know, a couple of times a month during these shows, I will talk about social and political and whatever other type of issues that are pressing, either because of events or because it's just something that's been on my mind, because I like to talk. So I always think it's helpful to kind of talk to people about those things. So if you've turned on the television, you know that there's a lot going on in the White House right now. And the thing that frightens me as an attorney is to see our Constitution essentially and our democracy just kind of being shredded right before our very eyes. And, you know, people that may not be politically inclined or, you know, may not know what some of these things mean, may not really understand, you know, may not really understand the seriousness of what's happening. And so when you look at our, you know, all the things right now with the Russian hacks, before now we're finding out information now that, you know, this information was known prior to, the election. Seconds. And so that is a huge deal to know that another country was able to hack in our system and to get information to potentially blackmail a, political candidate. And now that candidate, former candidate, is now the president of the United States. I've never seen anything like this in my lifetime, and it's scary. And so I always encourage people to get involved, with local organizations that are doing things that you're passionate about so that your voice can be heard. Write to your politicians, write to your elected officials, because at the end of the day, they represent you. So in closing, I just want to say, I know that was kind of rushed. In closing, I want to say, take care of you, take care of each other, and join us back next week at 10. Thanks. Have a great week.